We pick up this week where we left off last week. They have just fed the 5,000. Chapter 14, verses 22 through 33. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." These are the words of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Amen. Have any of you been to Manhattan, Kansas recently? Maybe. I don't know if you've been there, but the town is in mayhem. It's all these vehicles parked up on the sidewalk, parked in people's yards, swerving up, driving on the sidewalk, running through red lights. It's mayhem. I'm not talking about freshman drivers. I'm talking about scooters. Have you seen the scooters? You know, they look like a skateboard with a pogo stick. You know what I'm talking about? They are everywhere. Actually, I heard that they got rid of them this year. So I guess things are better. You can go back to Manhattan. You'll be safe. I mention it because I think they're awesome, these scooters. I see them around town, too. They have them here in Kansas City. You have an app on your phone. You pay a dollar and then like 20 cents a mile, and you can drive wherever. They're electric. I don't know how long you can go, but when you're done with them, you just leave them. And then the company goes around at night, and they all have GPS, and they pick them up, and they recharge them, and then they're ready to go the next day. So my thing is, I want to try one. I want to do it, because it looks like fun, but I resist because I'm anxious about it. And there are some reasons. One is that I saw a guy do an amazing face plant with one of those. And I don't want to be embarrassed like that. You know, I don't want people to see what looks like this old guy being shot out of a cannon, you know. That's not for me. And I'm like, could I steer properly? Would I run a red light? Should I be on the street or on the sidewalk, which is appropriate when I get pulled over by the cops? And the big one, is there a weight limit? So I'm afraid for those reasons, and so I'm not gonna do it. I've decided not to do it. There's just too much anxiety involved. And that's what we're gonna talk about today, is anxiety. I have a definition for you from anxiety that maybe you haven't heard before. The idea is, anxiety is risk plus fear. Anxiety is risk plus fear. It's having fear about a potential risk. Does that make sense? I personally have a lot of anxiety. I deserve an honorary PhD in anxiety. People face anxiety when they're thinking about the future. Opportunities or inevitabilities that you're going to encounter later on, something that you're dreading happening. What if this happens? What if that happens? It's like your brain is looking at a risky situation and being overcome by fear. The fear of maybe failure or embarrassing yourself, rejection, all that kind of stuff. That's where I think anxiety comes from when we're looking towards the future. So what is it that makes you anxious? Money? Relationships? Work? Politics? Your health? I'd be willing to bet a dollar that at least two of those rang a bell for you with anxiety. Because those are the things that people get most anxious about. There are other things too, lots of other things, little day-to-day things, little tiny things, and also the big things that keep you awake at night. Anxiety is pervasive. Although there may be a couple people in this room that have no idea what I'm talking about. You don't even understand what anxiety is. You just don't face anxiety. If that's you, you're dismissed. I don't even want you to introduce yourself to me afterwards. For the rest of us, we have to face the facts. Life is risky, and we face challenges every day, and sometimes we drag our feet or we isolate ourselves because we're afraid of those challenges, which means that anxiety is holding us back from enjoying the fullness of life. That's me with those scooters. That's really a tiny example of not being willing to take a risk because of fear. But I use that example because I want to share with you another word, an alternative to anxiety, and that is adventure. The opposite of anxiety is adventure. Think about that. Here's my definition of adventure. Adventure is risk plus hope. Think about that. Anxiety is risk plus fear. Adventure is risk plus hope. You have hope that you will succeed. You have hope that you'll get through this, that on the other side of this may be some wisdom you're going to learn from this experience. Moving from anxiety to adventure. That's what this sermon is about. For that tiny example, what if I were to say, forget this and jump on one of those scooters and drive all over town, hopping off the sidewalk onto the street, back and forward? That would be me undergoing an adventure. I'm not going to do that, but it would be. That would be cool. I would be throwing off the shackles of anxiety. I'm wondering how much adventure you have in your life. It's an important part of our lives, and sometimes we neglect it. Sometimes we forget it's even an option. But take this story about Peter as a perfect example of moving from anxiety to adventure. Peter is so adventurous in this story, he almost upstages Jesus, who is walking on water. Almost. So the disciples are in the boat on the Sea of Galilee. Here's a picture of Jan on a boat on the Sea of Galilee. That was back in 2012. When we were in the Holy Land. But this story takes place at night. Things always seem riskier at night, don't they? And the disciples were terrified. You want to talk about fear. They were terrified. They were not thinking clearly, because if they were thinking clearly, they would have remembered what Jesus had done earlier that day, feeding 5,000 men, plus women and children. They would have maybe remembered that Jesus can do amazing things. Maybe they would have put it together, but they didn't. They were overcome by fear, and I can relate to that. Jesus says, it's me. Don't be such scaredy cats. And I can imagine the disciples sighing with relief. Oh, it's just Jesus, okay. Walking on the water. But Peter's response is different. He decides to turn his fear into hope. And so he does something different. He wants to walk on the water too. Now, this is one of those times when I picture Jesus laughing. We don't ever see evidence of Jesus laughing in Scripture, but I'm convinced that he does. And I think this is one of those times because he's seeing Peter take this risk. And it tickles him. That's what I think. So Jesus says, come on ahead. And Peter steps out of the boat and onto the water. Do you realize what a feat that is? Peter stepping onto the water? What Jesus is doing here is really important, even more than just a magic trick. It's a sign that he is the Son of God, and he's come to bring order to the chaos. Water was a symbol of chaos in the Bible. And if you look through the Bible, you can see all these examples of God establishing order by controlling the waters of chaos. Think about this, the creation story, God separates the water. The story of the Exodus, the parting of the Red Sea, and then God draws water out of the rock for them to drink. Jesus is baptized in water. Later, he turns water into wine, and he tells a woman, a Samaritan woman, about living water, this transformation of water into something for which you will never thirst. Peter, by stepping on that water, illustrates how far we humans can go. And that makes sense, because we were created in the image of God. And in that creation story, God gives us dominion over the earth. Peter shows us just what humans are capable of and just how far we have to go. He sees the wind and the storm clouds, and he begins to have fear again. And he begins to sink into the water. This is when I see Jesus having a belly laugh as he helps Peter into the boat, and he says, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? I picture him laughing because Peter has just shown a tremendous amount of faith by doing this. But he's just scratching the surface of what's possible with faith. So he gets in the boat. I picture the other disciples giving him high fives. Way to go, way to go. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they were just shrinking back in terror still. Maybe. But I know that Peter's life was changed because he was able to turn his anxiety into an adventure. He saw the risk, but he chose hope instead of fear. And that made all the difference. So back to my scooter story. I want to show you what happened next. I'm just kidding, I didn't do it. I'm sure Chandler was dying back there. There's a clip? Oh my goodness. Maybe someday I'll do it, but at this point I'm still one of those disciples cringing back in the boat, unwilling to take the leap. But I have a better example for you. This is a very personal example, but if we're talking about moving from real life to real love, I can't personally think of an example of real life more than what I've experienced with my mother over the past 25 years. I got permission from her to tell this story, by the way. It is pretty personal. So here goes. I was born into a very loving family. My parents were both Presbyterian ministers, and we grew up with this sense of faith and reliance upon God My family was very supportive. They both came from kind of dysfunctional families, and they wanted to have harmony in their family. So they made harmony and family more important than just about anything else. And I had a great childhood and very supported, but it all came crashing down when I was 28 years old. Turned out my father had been having a series of affairs the whole time. And this harmony that I grew up with, it was kind of an illusion. Everything broke. Their marriage of 30 years ended. And it just crumbled. My mom was devastated. That's an understatement. She felt like a Mack truck had hit her, and it brought her to her knees. She was broken, and I wondered if she would ever recover. How could she move into the future under the weight of all that anxiety that she now felt? She struggled for a few years, and she met a nice guy named Jim. He treated her well. They got married, and 3 years later, he died. And the anxiety just came crashing in like a tidal wave. And I thought, how does a person survive this? She told me this week when I said I was going to preach on this. At some point in all this, apparently, I said to her, I'm afraid you're going to grow up to be an old, bitter woman. I can't believe I said that to my mom. She said, no, you were in tears, and it really made me think. So I got away with that one. What I failed to take into account was her faith. She's always been a woman of great faith. You can see it in her preaching, in her pastoral care as a pastor, and it's been the guiding force of her life. And somewhere in there, it gave her the strength to forge a new life. I noticed this switch from anxiety to adventure. The first time I noticed it was when she went to a workshop about retirement. And she was dreading going to the workshop, you know, all the finances and everything, but it was a great workshop. And she came out kind of feeling excited. She had some options. What she decided to do was to move to Alabama. We used to live in Alabama. Her family comes from Alabama, a place called Woolly Springs, and she owns an acre of land from her family there, out in the country, in the woods. And she decided to move there by herself. And she made friends with a contractor, and this contractor and her built a house, every room to my mom's exact specifications. This beautiful house that she lives in with a big deck that's facing a wooded yard and a creek in the back. And she moved there. And she loves it. She lives a lot of her life in solitude and loves that solitude. But she also is active in other ways. She goes all around North Alabama preaching at different churches. And they love her, all these different churches. She's part of different groups, women's groups that she's part of. Her and her sisters who live down there, they get together every few weeks and play canasta. And my mom always wins, which is cool. She loves pottery. She makes pottery. She does this raku style of firing, and she's so excited about it and proud of it. I haven't even mentioned the biggest thing. She's written 5 novels. She has written 5 novels. The first novel is called Like Sheep by Judy Mitchell Rich. Like Sheep by Judy Mitchell Rich. These novels are semi-autobiographical. They're about a pastor in Kansas named Pastor Suzanne, who goes from church to church, big churches, small churches, and she uncovers a kind of mystery in each church and gets to the truth of it. It's really cool. And this Pastor Suzanne deals with her family, trying to keep her family together. She deals with a painful divorce. The books are great. And she's never made it to the bestseller list. That's true. But she's sold a lot of books. And there are lots of Pastor Suzanne fans out there. Isn't that cool? I think that's awesome. And that's not even the biggest thing. Her personality changed. She became more open and accepting of other people. She began to smile more, to engage with other people. There was a twinkle in her eye that wasn't there before. And over time, she even learned how to forgive. I want to tell you about this past Christmas. We met at my brother's house in North Carolina. We get together every year. It's my brother and his daughter, Sam. My brother's divorced. And my mom and Jan and me and my dad and his wife, Linda. And we get together and we have the best time. Would you believe that Linda and my mom are best buds? They went on a trip to New York City together. They have so much in common, and they love each other. I mean, this sounds like a storybook ending. Suddenly, the family that discovers harmony, the real kind, you know, we voice video each other every week and keep in touch. It's fantastic. It's a testament to me of what can happen when somebody chooses the path of adventure, risk plus hope, over anxiety. Now, making that transition was not easy for her. It took more than a decade. It's not something you just snap your fingers and suddenly you're there. This sermon is not a sermon about the positive effects of positive thinking or just having courage. This is a sermon about the fact that we're all in the same boat, so to speak. We all face the future with a sense of uncertainty, whether we want to or not. But here's the reminder. We were created with agency. God created us with agency, which means we have the opportunity to choose how we will live our lives. Some people have anxiety that is so powerful that they have to seek medication and therapy. If you're one of those people, I want to say, I understand. And I pray for you. But I want to remind you that it's possible to live with anxiety and still choose a life of adventure. Say, I'm going to do this thing. The best news of all is that we have a God who walks towards us in the face of Jesus. And Jesus holds out his hand, smiling, calming the waters of chaos, and saying, come. Amen.